Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Some great news for Real Madrid this week. They are 100% certain to be the champions of the European Super League this season and every other season. Yes, Barcelona have joined all the other fools in pulling out and giving Los Blancos a clear run. All of you doubters, you're the sort of people who haven't sold your house and used the proceeds to buy Bitcoin. You'll be laughing on the other side of your face when I'm a trillionaire. And while we're on the subject of Joan Laporta's financial strategy, the Barca board have stood down in order to fight next month's elections. They're promising to sign Marcus Rashford, who already plays for them, and Julian Alvarez, who hasn't scored a league goal since November the 1st. Maybe just whistle up another half dozen superstars from La Masia. Anyway, the top two won. We can all stop pretending that there's some kind of three-way race going on for the title. On Thursday, Atletico Madrid went to Real Betis in the Copa del Rey, beat them 5-0. And then on Sunday, they lost at home to the same opponent. Here's some analysis. Poof, poof. That's football for you, isn't it? Poof. And if you want more high-end punditry, you become a Patreon at patreon.com/LTEL. We will, of course, reflect on all 9 of the games played in La Liga this weekend. Rayo Vallecano couldn't get a pitch for their game with Oviedo. Was it double booked, lads? Is that what it was? Oh, no, you relayed it on the cheap on Thursday and couldn't play football on it on the weekend. Awkward, but still, that'll show all those lefty fans who's boss. Being rich and owning a Spanish football club does not seem to be the pathway to happiness. Terry, we need to point out that we're not financial advisors. That's not proper financial advice I was giving. Because we are the sort of people who said Alexander Isak wasn't worth £60 million pounds, and then they sold him for £130 million a couple of years later. So, you know, yeah.
But so, we're in it for the long run. It's looking, at the moment, it doesn't look too bad, does it?
Yes, it does not look like it. Well, he's not. Who is a £130 million player? Not Julian Alvarez. There's a lot to talk about, Terry. Matches that did happen, matches that things that aren't happening. So you're next weekend. Let's race too far ahead. But you're due to be doing Rayo Vallecano versus Atletico Madrid next weekend.
Yes.
Yes. Good luck with that. Do you still get paid? Crucially, do you get paid if the game gets called off?
Thankfully, I'll be travelling anyway. I'll be doing another game on the Saturday. That's on the Sunday. It should be all right by then. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know. I certainly wouldn't lay a pitch on a Thursday to try and play on Saturday lunchtime.
No. And in the middle of February and really bad weather at the moment in particularly down south, but the Madrid as well is had more than its fair share of rain. So I've seen a footage of them with half the pitch done and there's a massive storm going on and there's no hope of getting the other half laid before the game at the weekend. And this came about because of the players making complaints about the safety issues of the pitch. Now, I'm kind of, I mean, Atletico Madrid, their players are complaining about their pitch as well. And Koke made the whole interview after the game against Betis, Koke was moaning about the pitch, and I think the previous game, another player had moaned about the pitch. And when you see the pitch, they focused on the pitch. I'm thinking, I'd love to have played on a pitch like that in February. I mean, I don't know what the problem is, but Rayo, I kind of get, because there was a big patch in the 18-yard box, which is very old-fashioned, that I have no idea why that they had to slot in a patch at either end of the pitch, 6-yard box, penalty area. The players can. Now I get it. If the pitch is that bad in terms of there's bare patches, if the players are concerned about picking up an ACL or breaking an ankle and stuff, I get that. Atletico Madrid's pitch, I don't. That's fine. But Raya's pitch did look iffy, and the players made an official complaint to La Liga. They made an official complaint about the training facilities, about the lack of, even stupidly, no hot water after training.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Now, so Rayo were kind of pushed into a corner by their players making the complaints. They probably didn't have any plans on relaying the pitch until the complaint was put in officially to La Liga by the players. So in their haste, they tried to repair the pitch before playing at the weekend.
And, but that's stupid. I mean, just say, that doesn't go back and instantly create hot water in the training ground, does it? You know, don't do something else stupid because you haven't done the previous thing well. The club's, it's a weird club though, isn't it? It's a fascinating one, but it's this careful what you wish for thing, isn't it? Because the fans, it's got this old fashioned left wing kind of local neighbourhood thing going on that you can't go and buy tickets. There are no corporate boxes, obviously. You know, there's a tower block around one end of the pitch. And okay, great. And I get why, some Brits who live there support Rayo Vallecano. And there is a little bit of a kind of novelty factor about being a Rayo fan. But the guy who owns it, he's not like that at all. He's owned it for ages. He wants to develop it, buy a new ground, have the whole corporate hospitality, get a load of money, presumably. Yeah. And so this is a real...
So he's refusing to regenerate, refurbish the stadium.
Yeah.
He's taking it to as far as he can go until something cracks and the supporters kind of agree for a new stadium on the outskirts of Madrid, away from the neighbourhood. And it's a stalemate.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've had to see money as well to improve the infrastructure of the clubs.
Yeah, so that's venture capital money that, and that's obviously not free. You know, that's being paid back in shed loads later.
But majority of clubs wanted it. We've seen other clubs, Mallorca refurbishing, rebuilt their stadium, Celta, Levante. Yeah. There are others. Getafe are in the process, so I'm not convinced there's any real motivation to do it. They've knocked a bit of the stadium down. Chucked in some hardcore. Let's see if we stay up, lads. That'd be the next thing. And that building site is going to be there. I'm predicting for quite a while at the Coliseum. But the Rayo haven't done anything. And, it's meant to be for the training grounds, which they all needed improving. I went to training grounds when I was living out there almost 20 years ago, and I was astonished how poor some of them were, how open they were. You could just walk in off the street and watch a training session. It wasn't an issue. And I used to think that... compare those training grounds to the ones in the Premier League, but they're all improved. They've all improved as well. The money is being used properly. Apart from Rayo, you can't buy a ticket online. You have to queue up and buy one. You can't buy a new shirt when it comes out online. You have to go and queue up at the club shop. It's like the 1970s in England. I mean, I used to go and watch Spurs, and older than you, and I remember going to watch a game on the day of a game and queuing up and hoping you got in before it sold out.
The club
shop was at the stadium, that was it.
Yeah.
One club shop, and you had to go and, if you wanted to go and buy a match shirt, that was where you got it from and stuff like that. And Rayo, this is 50 years on, it's no different. So
yeah.
I like the cool hipster image of Rayo, and it is something different. And Santi Cazorla made a real big point of saying that La Liga is light years away from the Premier League. I get it because he was involved in that game that particular day. They made the journey, and it's shambolic that this was called off so late because of the circumstances. Sevilla was called off as well that day, but it was replayed the next day, and there were genuine reasons. The rain in as I say, in Andalusia in particular was surprising, and the roads were collapsing in Cadiz. People were driving along the road on a main road, and it was collapsing because of the rain. But this was different. This was self-inflicted by Rayo. And I get why Cazorla was frustrated. I don't think they are light years ahead of the Premier League, La Liga. I think there's a coming together. There are things that could be improved in both. I like many things in La Liga. And I like the way that most of the clubs are improving. But Rayo let them down.
Yeah. And it's not an easy one to resolve because you want to retain the authenticity. And part of that is the geography. It's not, I don't think there's anything intrinsically left wing about not wanting a proper club shop or to buy things online. Left wingers aren't against the internet, as far as I'm aware.
Could put a little stand behind the goal as opposed to, because I mean, even if it was the same size as the current board that they've got up,
yeah,
I mean, that surely then wouldn't infringe on the apartment flats, the tower block behind the goal. If instead of having that big board up, that you had a mini stand, and then you can refurb, you can regenerate the rest of the stadium as well, and then that keeps the club in the neighbourhood, and but he doesn't want to. It's prime real estate, I guess. You can sell it, put something else on it, and then move the club out, and it loses its identity.
Because then it's just yet another football club stuck out somewhere on a ring road.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, so there we are. So that's Rayo Vallecano versus Oviedo. Didn't happen. And I mean, who knows when it will happen, and who knows whether they'll play this weekend or not. I mean, anyway.
It's a big game this week. It's a derby. They have to. But I mean, La Liga should be there. Someone should be camping out at the Vallecas, making sure that everything is in place so that high profile match against Atletico Madrid isn't a shambles and an embarrassment to La Liga.
Yeah, so Oviedo are demanding the points, aren't they? But we'll see.
Yeah, I kind of get that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just a normal rained off match. It's, they were foolish enough to mess around with a pitch.
Yeah.
And blew it.
So, yeah, it's a good point, because if you've got a bit of an injury crisis going on, dig up your own pitch a few days before the game. So, for a big game. Yeah, anyway, what a mess. Right then, European Super League.
I've pulled out the Ballon d'Or next season as well. So I've left that clear for everybody else that's in it.
Yes, I think other than only Real Madrid and Barcelona were left in the European Super League. Only Florentino Perez, I think, still believes it's.
Well, when I read it, I went, that's Super League. They're pulling out of a league that never happened and it's not likely to happen. Who else was in it? Then I looked and thought,
Would have been plenty of Clásicos if they'd gone ahead with it. I would feel free. Everyone's got any opinions, let us know. But it died when the English football clubs, when the English football fans literally rioted about it. We're very passive football fans in England. Don't complain about clubs. Don't, you know, not waving hankies like they do at Mestalla. But that one, that's sort of struck a fear in the heart.
There was solidarity for once, wasn't there? Instead of just complaining about your own club, people were allowed to complain about all the clubs. So, the big clubs that normally play in European football, it was coming together, wasn't there, with the same cause.
Yeah.
Which doesn't often happen. It's not just about one set of supporters moaning about their owner and the manager. It was a coming together, and it worked.
Yeah.
To the extent it's forced the sort of new variation of the Champions League.
They're already working on that anyway, weren't they? So anyway, so we do those games then. Let's go to Mestalla. White hankies being waved, fury at Valencia. It's an interesting case. So Real Madrid won 2-0. Let's get that. Carrera scores, and Mbappe gets one later on. Valencia had set up deep, hadn't they? They'd set up deep, defended with a lot of
No shot on target the whole game.
Yeah, yeah.
We're playing against a weakened Real Madrid team. No Bellingham, no Vinicius. Other players missing. I keep banging about the young back four. He was even younger this time with David Jimenez coming in at right back. So you look at Jimenez, Asensio, Housen and Carreras. Why wouldn't you ever go at that? It's not the Real Madrid. Because of injuries, it's not the Real Madrid defence that we've become accustomed to that you would see playing in the Champions League final. Yeah. Why wouldn't you have a go at
and
that?
They gave them some problems late on, didn't they? Before the second goal, when they did attack, it was a disciplined defence, wasn't it? But yeah, I take your point. He's literally just hoping for a 0-0, isn't he? There,
exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. And Real Madrid weren't playing well, but they weren't playing bad. It was, and I think element of surprise from Real Madrid players that we expected more. You go to the Mestalla, I know the team are not very good, but the atmosphere lends itself to even if you're a Real Madrid player. Not, you haven't got bags of experience if you're Carreras and Housen are playing in La Liga and the young right back David Jimenez. Asensio is a little bit more experienced in La Liga, but you go there and it should be an atmosphere in a stadium where you're apprehensive, because the crowd are up for it, the team are going to be up for it, and they weren't. The crowd were, but the team weren't. Corbyn's got a problem, I think. I really do. I think that they sign players, he's reluctant to play them. And you're looking at it and thinking, the reaction of the crowd when he took Beltran off, I was kind of surprised. I was thinking, And it appears now that they wanted Hugo Lloris taken off because they love Umar Sadiq. So they were happy he was coming on. But when it was Beltran coming off, I don't know what they expected, whether they expected an additional striker or Hugo Lloris to be brought off. Now, Hugo Lloris done all right for Valencia. And I think that if you're a supporter of Valencia, you admire his enthusiasm, dedication, his work ethic. So I'd be surprised if they were singling him out. But that seemed to be the catalyst for the bigger protests that we saw when he replaced Beltran with Sadiq.
With Valencia in particular, I'm always very keen that everyone turns their focus exactly where it needs to be. Now, good criticism of Corberan, legitimate, but the club is in a mess because of the ownership, who never move on and won't move on. So it's not dissimilar to Rayo Vallecano, except this one's more obvious. There's a bit of a conundrum at Rayo about how you move it forward. Valencia moves forward with different ownership, simple as that.
Exactly. And then there is no sign that's going to happen. That's the problem. And the club seem content with where they're at. And, you know, by bringing in the players that they bring in, a few on loan now this time in this transfer window, it's obvious for all to see that there are players playing for Valencia now that are signing for Valencia now that wouldn't have been signed 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been a slow decline, to the extent now that you're looking in, it's a genuine threat that they could get relegated. And now you're looking at the only thing they can do, the club's not going to be sold. There's nothing anyone can do now between now and the end of the season apart from the coach and the players. That's it. I mean, the Ron Goulet, the chief exec, is... Which even that itself is a strange one. I don't know if Ron Goulet, the former Chelsea chief executive, was in there. I don't know if he speaks Spanish or anything like that, but he's been put in as director of football. They've actually signed a centre-back for next season on a free transfer who's out of contract. And I'm thinking, two things. I'm thinking, you actually needed players now. Mm. You've signed someone next season. And the player is he not thinking, well, let's see if you get relegated or stay up? And then, so like, I can't believe he's actually signed on the dotted line and everything's done, not knowing which division Valencia are going to be in. And we're all in the same position. We're looking at Valencia. We don't know what division they're going to be in. Can't be confident they stay up. They need probably more guts, more courage. But, and at home, their form has been okay. So why wouldn't you have a pop at Real Madrid without Bellingham, without Vinicius, without Rodrigo? And they didn't.
Yeah. Right backs and fitness thereof is an issue at Real Madrid, isn't it? So Trent Alexander-Arnold came on. Carvajal, we saw furiously talking to the fitness guru. The fitness guru, you've got some question marks about how much how much of a guru he really is. And Carvajal seemed to have his doubts as well, didn't he? I don't know. So what's going on? Can you put Carvajal on? We don't know without seeing. The last I saw him was that Copa del Rey game where he ran like an old man. And I thought he's nowhere near fit, but I don't know. Without sit, we don't know, do we, I guess?
No, allegedly him and Rudiger went to London for some physical tests on their injuries and they both got the all clear.
Yeah.
And so, and it is clear that Carvajal is frustrated. It's a World Cup summer.
Yeah.
He wants to be back playing again. And this time Valverde was back in midfield. David Jimenez come in as right back, but Alexander Arnold comes on, still no Carvajal. I'm mystified as we haven't had a real explanation yet, other than we want to be patient with him. We really patient. Danny Carvajal doesn't seem to be agreeing with that need for patience. It's been a month now and he's barely played. He's been on the bench every game. So it is an issue. I'm baffled by it, to be honest. And now they're talking about the contract is up. He might be leaving in the summer, but that happens. You know, time catches up with everybody. But if he's there available now to do a job and he's not being used, it just creates a bit of friction that they Arbeloa could do without.
Yeah, yeah. Barcelona, however, beat Mallorca.
They were good for Real Madrid.
So right, go on. Yeah.
They did their job. They were good. They had players missing. They played a team that they probably expected more from. And they didn't. And Mbappe scores. I like the Mbappe goal because he's 20 yards offside. And I often wonder, if I'd have been playing with those offside rules, I would have done that. I think Van Nistelrooy started it many, many years ago when it first came out, where basically the ball gets played forward. I said 20 metres. It was at least 10 metres offside. But the ball goes wide And if you give Mbappe a 10-metre head start, you ain't catching him.
Yeah.
So he was clever enough to, when the cross comes in, he put himself behind the ball. And for Mbappe, it was a tap.
How do you deal with that? Funnily enough, the game we're going to in a second, and I saw Marici do it the other day as well, where he found himself offside. Because you've got to think about this as a defence now. Because classically, you know, as soon as the ball is cleared, you get up and everyone gets up, and anyone behind you, any attacker behind you, is caught offside if the ball comes quickly back in. But if it goes wide and they run it back in, then you've got a problem, haven't you? Because that guy standing offside as a centre back who's pulled out, who's pushed up, you've got to get back in and mark him. Now, obviously, he's got to hold his line. He can't go ahead of the ball. You know, when the ball goes across, he's got to be onside.
Yeah.
But it does give you a problem, doesn't it?
I don't know how you solve it as a defender, but I look at it from my point of view. I wouldn't care. I'm just like, it's not hard to coach.
Yeah.
It isn't. I mean, you've got two or three players involved in the action where you think, well, you're wide, you've got to stay onside, you've got the ball, you've got to play, don't play the ball to Mbappe, play the ball wide, and then Mbappe can get involved in participating in the game again, as long as then he's onside when the cross comes in.
I suppose centre-back's just got to be switched onto it, and you've got to be aware, right, or you just don't do the trigger push out.
Yeah, if I was playing against Barcelona, I wouldn't even come back in my own half of the pitch. I'd just stay hanging around the edge of the penalty box. Just think, well, don't play it to me. Play it to someone else, and then I'll be there for the running. And when the winger crosses it, I'll be there for the tapping. It's something that I can't. I'm astonished it hasn't been developed further by coaches who use that as a tactic. But And teams are obsessed with getting everybody back behind the ball. And I see that Julian Alvarez, who we'll talk about in a minute, I looked at his touch map and his heat map for the first half. It's all in his own half of the pitch. So teams are obsessed with everybody back behind the ball when you see centre-forwards playing in a position I would never have played in as a centre-forward. You know, it's 4-4-2 formation. You got your back four, you got your midfield four, and you got your two strikers. Within touching distance of the defensive third of the pitch, not near the halfway line, as part of this low block. So I think, and then you got teams that then look to play on the counter attack. But there's, I'm bemoaning the fact that there's no role in the game anymore for a goal hanger, or very few of them.
Yeah.
And there is another one we'll talk about like that, but it's. Yeah, I'm really surprised that hasn't been developed to really cause problems for teams. Running from deep beats the offside trap for Barcelona. But if he leaves someone up and still have runners from deep, then Barcelona, as you said, what do? Do they step up? Do they drop off? Do they look and think, well, you know, I just don't think it's done enough.
Yeah. Can we do Barcelona? 3-0 against Mallorca. Lewandowski, the ball came to him with a little bit of fortune, but he takes it like a master finisher of chances that he is. And then Lamine Yamal scores one really good goal, and then Mark Bernal with another superbly taken goal.
It was a lovely turn by Bernal. He got fortunate with the finish.
Mm-hmm.
The finish is heavily deflected, but it was a surprising touch, wasn't it? It took everybody by surprise. Hansi Flick was delighted. Delighted for the young player. I believe that's his first goal in La Liga.
I think so, yeah.
And it's been a troublesome time for him. Even he's probably got frustrated, lack of playing time since he's been back from the injury. But that was a lovely goal. Lewandowski, kind of is an easy finish, but one that you'd see a centre-forward maybe snatch at because the ball falls to him and his first thought was quick shoot. But Lewandowski doesn't, takes two or three touches, doesn't panic and slots it away. Lamine Yamal was from the one angle of it, it looked a good goal initially, but on the replays, when you see it from behind him, he's actually just drilled it into that corner. He's not just got it out of his feet, dropped his shoulder. And by the way, when he drops his shoulder, it's amazing how far he sends people the wrong way. You look at the replay and he drops his shoulder and people have gone, the defenders are miles in the opposite direction. And then he just pings it into the corner. The goalkeeper doesn't even move because he's wing-footed. But a lot of players in that position would just be hitting it towards the goal, hoping to get power, hoping it gets away from the keeper. But he didn't. It was like a driven pass into the corner. And Barcelona were good, but they do concede chances. And again, it's the same old thing. You're confused. You're thinking, well, that was a chance, but I think he might have been offside, but the game's continued. Gian Garcia saved it. There's no need to stop the game. But I think that was in an offside position, but Mallorca had chances. But they didn't make the most of them. So another game where Barcelona get through, players rested. As opposed to Real Madrid, who haven't got a Copa del Rey semi-final, Barcelona have. So players were rested in this game. Pretty strong back four, though, which does appear to me now to be the one that Hansi Flick has actually settled on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Eric Garcia and Kubasi at centre-backs, Baldan, Koundé. But De Jong was rested. You could say Ferran Torres was rested. I like the way Hansi Flick suddenly is playing when he plays against supposedly weaker teams, and that's the majority of teams in La Liga. He plays to a more attacking midfield. So Fermin and Dani Olmo suddenly appeared as midfield players against teams they expect to dominate against. And it's working.
Yeah. So in terms of the promises made by Joan Laporta that are referenced at the top, so they you have to resign in order to fight the election, so they're not going anywhere. I imagine they'll win because things have gone, things have gone pretty well. They're linked with Rashford, who they would have to pay 20-odd million, £26 million. I guess that's €30 million, is it, roughly, to sign him. So, A, are you doing that? B, Bastoni. So he wants a left-sided centre-back, doesn't he? I mean, I haven't watched him enough to know.
Likewise. I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on Bastoni. But left-sided centre-back is an obvious...
Yeah.
Clearly, what's needed.
Yeah, yeah. And Julian Alvarez is the other one, which was in the course of this discussion, we'll move on and do the Atletico game as well. But November the 1st, he scored a goal. He had that flurry at the end of September. He scored a couple of Champions League goals since then. But yeah, he's having a proper problem, isn't he?
He is, and I feel for him. I really do. And I saw him at the weekend sitting on the bench in the second half because he was replaced at half-time again. And he looked miserable. He looked really depressed. And I get Simeone has a choice to make. Do I win this game? I need to win this game. We're losing 1-0. And make the change. Three changes at half-time. And destroy his confidence even more. Lookman has now came in as well. If we're looking at Atletico Madrid, some interesting issues to look at their team. I mean, they didn't play bad at the weekend. I don't want to be critical of the selection from Simeone. I would ask this if we've got Atleti listeners. Do we know the best team for Atletico Madrid?
Mm.
I think if we had Barcelona and Real Madrid, most would agree on the best lineups. Atletico Madrid, I have no idea what the best lineup is. Is it Sorloth and Griezmann or Alvarez and Lookman up front? Is it this player out wide? I would probably say automatic first choice picks that everyone will agree with are Black. No one's going to disagree with that. Well, I did see one or two complaints say that Musso is better with the ball at his feet, and that's why they won 5-0 against Betis, and then Oblak plays and they lose 1-0, which I'm not having that. I think Llorente is a first pick, the right back. I don't know any other first pick. Hansko would play somewhere, but is he centre back or left back?
Mm.
I don't know then the makeup of the rest of the team. We could disagree.
Simeone not the first pick?
Probably, yeah. I would probably say he would be the other one.
Yeah.
So that's not many, is it? Whereas if we do Barcelona and Real Madrid and everyone's fit, we're probably guessing 9 out of the 11 we're all probably agreeing with at some stage. But with Atletico Madrid, I'm thinking the Norman's not playing much anymore, and he's got a World Cup coming up. He plays for Spain on a regular basis. You've got Jimenez, you've got Hansko, you've got Longley, Ruggeri left back, but he can play Hansko left back as well. Midfield, Koke, does he play every game? Should he play every game? Barrios, that seems to be the partnership, but you've now got other players involved in the mix where you're thinking, well, you know, Conor Gallagher didn't play much. You know, they've signed a couple of others in terms of the wide positions. Nico Gonzalez hasn't really been used that much on the left. Raspadori came and went. Almada has been, where's his best position? Where is he going to play? Alex Baena. And then up front, you've got to, we say about it, it's such a strong squad. And it is. But what they lack is a strongest 11. It's really difficult to predict. Atletico Madrid could win the Champions League. I'm not predicting they will, but they have enough good players to win the Champions League. They have enough good players to go and win 5-0 at Betis, but then they're capable of doing what they did at the weekend and losing 1-0 at home. Solov came off the bench at half-time. He was impressive with a couple of crosses into the box. Do you know how many times he touched the ball in half a game? 5. And I came away from that game thinking, if they got more to Solov, he would have, because every cross, he's unplayable. One was from a corner, I think. Another one was from a cross. That was the only two touches he had in the box. He had 5 touches in half a game of football. Alvarez, his touch and heat map was deep. Lookman was played exclusively in a quarter of the pitch on the left wing.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of, and then when he was substituted, you saw the director of football who's just signed him, who was really gleeful when he made his debut against Betis, and they kept showing the director of football. Is it Mattia Almania?
Almania, isn't it? Yeah. Because he was great in that game, wasn't he?
He looked all cocky and pleased with himself. And then I think Lookman was good at the weekend. He looked a smooth player. I like the way he receives the ball. He looks like he could be a real asset to Atletico Madrid. Then when he substituted, that you saw that went across to the director's box and they looked as if to say, what are you doing? I agreed with that. I think, what are you doing? What are you taking? He looks a threat. So Atletico are really, they're out the tight race. No chance. Absolutely no chance. And now that I'm looking and thinking, are they in, Villarreal? Putting them under pressure for the third spot. Is there a threat coming from behind if they don't liven up? That top four isn't a given. I think the gap is okay. I think with Betis, it's 7 points at the moment, but that can be turned around. So it's really, they were brilliant, but that's football. Who knows? I'll probably talk about other teams in the run in a minute when we look at the other games. When you go into a game, I made Betis slight favourites in the cup match because of being at home. They've been good at home. They can improve away from home, but they've been good at home. I think you can't predict when one team has an absolute nightmare of a game of football, which is what Betis had. Pellegrini made a few changes, changed the goalkeeper in particular, which made them weaker. And you go into games predicting this outcome, predicting that outcome, expecting that teams play to their level in every game they play, and they don't. And Betis had an absolute stinker, and Atletico were fantastic. And then 3 days later, it kind of was more like the game I expected the first game to be. And Atletico weren't poor. Great goal from Anthony. And Betis played well. But it's thankfully that's why we all watch football, because it's not predictable, or often it's not predictable. But Atletico, very unpredictable at the moment.
So just to answer that question about Alvarez, what are you doing with him if you're Barca? Are you trying to buy him? We were talking about massive fees, but I'm not paying a massive fee for a bloke now.
Well, there is a massive fee involved because Atletico paid a massive fee. But Atletico paid 90, didn't they? And then 3 months ago, they were looking at making a profit on that.
Yeah, and now they're not. João Felix took years to leave because they overpaid for him, and then Simeone didn't know what to do with him. And are we here again?
It's looking like that. Mm. But it's bizarre that 3 months ago, when it was suggested that Barcelona and Chelsea and Arsenal and other teams, you're looking and thinking, there's no way Atleti are going to let him go. It's going to cost. It's going to take a huge sum of money for someone to take Julian Alvarez away from Simeone and Atletico Madrid. And in the space of 3 months, it's now, would they get their money back?
Mm.
It's a difficult one. And Simeone's job, first and foremost, is to win games of football. So we can't be looking at him thinking he's got a, we've got an asset here I can't depreciate, so I've got to leave on.
But there is
other ways of managing a really talented... he was better than I thought when he came.
Yeah.
And I was calling him a superstar for Atletico Madrid. And that included when they beat Real Madrid 5 at the beginning of the season. He was brilliant in that game.
But a manager... It's not unreasonable if you're the president or the sporting director of a club to expect a manager to A, win football matches and B, not burn through players you've spent an absolute fortune on.
Yeah, it is reasonable and protect the assets and work harder to maintain a player like Julian Alvarez in terms of confidence. You know, I don't think he's a player with a big ego and so it shouldn't be that hard. But there is has been a failure somewhere where I don't think he's playing in the right position at the moment. I think he's turning into Antoine Griezmann, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not being critical, but Antoine Griezmann is that link-up player, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he drifts around the pitch. He has got goals, Antoine Griezmann, lots of goals, but he's never been the primary source of he's got to get 25 goals. Whereas Alvarez is a striker, is a goal scorer, is a centre-forward. But he's turning into that link-up player. Now, is that something he's been asked to do? Because when I look at Julian Alvarez at his best, he's working really hard to win the ball back up front initially. He works really hard in running in down the channels. And I think when he's at his electric, sharpest best, I think he's a centre-forward. And I'm seeing him develop into something else now at Atletico Madrid.
Right, we better crack on, Terry. We've got loads of games to do and loads of goals to discuss. Let's go last night, shall we? Because this is Tuesday as we are recording. But some of you will know, some of you won't. Villarreal beat Espanyol by 4-1. This is Espanyol, who we were lauding before Christmas, Terry, who've got 1 point in 2026 from 6 games. Villarreal hadn't won a game for a while, but they won this one. They won 4-1 somehow with 3 shots on target.
I didn't realise that. Yeah. And it looked such an easy victory as well when I'm watching it. Oh, they've scored again. Oh, it's another goal. How bad are Espanyol and this and that. And it was, it's an emphatic victory. I'm still baffled as to how they only got 1 point in the Champions League. Because when they're playing, when they're slick and they're playing the ball and they're moving the ball about quickly and they've got talented players, Mika Tauti's goal is breathtaking. Alberto Molero is playing really well. Pepe's goal was fabulous as well. And you're looking at and thinking, how? Why? I mean, they're really putting Espanyol to the sword. But you're right. They're a confusing team, Vieira. Mm. But sometimes they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
And they were last night. And it's perhaps they didn't have to accelerate through the gears to once they've gone 2-0 up. And they're playing against a team that are, to the extent now, I've looked at Espanyol, 12 points clear relegation. So they're going to be okay.
If they have another 6 games like the last 6 games, then they're in trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, they could be dragged into it.
Yeah.
But that was my first thought. Yeah. Not, are they going to qualify for Europe now? Which I kind of expected this to happen during the season. They haven't got a massive squad. They rely on the same players week in, week out. Manolo Gonzalez might have to freshen it up and play some of those players that don't play as often because they're looking jaded, looking tired. Now they're looking
but lost. The comfort. Collapse in form came after the break. So they'd had a week, 10 days off. I don't know how much time you actually get off, but they'd had the break and then came back and been awful.
Yeah, and they've signed players, but we're not seeing them. I kind of get it, Manolo Gonzalez, they haven't got a massively packed schedule that he can, like the old school days, pick the same starting lineup. But it might be time to freshen up. Things have gone against them as well. They've had some unluck and bad luck with penalty decisions that have gone against them. It kind of gets a snowball effect where you lose one, you lose two. Oh, this has gone against us. That's our third one on the trot. We've got a point. Now we've lost another one. And it kind of spirals and gets out of control. And this is what's happening to Espanyol. But Villarreal, they're level with Atletico Madrid. got a game in hand. That should be their target now, not just top four. Can they finish third?
Yeah. I need to get over being annoyed with Villarreal about how bad they were in Europe. I need to move on and enjoy their performances in La Liga.
Yeah, and also the fact that they're working hard again to be in it again next season. So, and they're going to be in it, and I'll be fuming if next year that Marcelino starts messing around with the starting lineup and playing different fullbacks and resting players for Champions League games, because we've got eight of those, and we might lose the first couple, but I'll win three or four of the next six. No.
Mm. Yeah, turns out it's not that easy.
Rant over.
Yes. Let's rattle through. We've got all the games are decent, actually. Real Sociedad, Terry, are now superb and are going to win the league under Pellegrino Matarazzo. So 3-1 win over Elche. Elche are one of the many, many teams in the sucked into a relegation battle, but their form in recent weeks for La Real and everything about it is suddenly like a huge wave of relief and joy about their performances.
Well, I think that's why I was so frustrated with not just this season, the season before under Aguasil, it was like it. Sergio Francisco took over. They wanted to continue that theme of bringing, you know, the coach through the ranks like Alguacil. And all the time I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, why have you've got so many good players. Why are Real Sociedad so boring to watch? and literally, a new person has come in from outside of the club that's not affected by, this is how we do things. So you come and have a look. Have a look at the squad we've got. He would have done his homework before. And then you start working with these players and you're thinking, well, yeah, we should be winning games. Now, I didn't expect this type of impact. I expected a change. They're not only are they winning, they're fun. They're really good to watch at the moment. And I think we all agree, so they should be. You know, and they've still got players missing through injury, but he's making the most of it. Bryce Mendes, I'm still irritated by the fact that he did receive a suspension. There's some sort of appeal gone on, but he didn't play at the weekend.
So this was the only game they didn't win in La Liga under Matarazzo was where you feel they got robbed in the derby.
Everybody does. Yeah, I mean, it's unanimous. It's the more I see it, the thing he's been knocked about three or four times and puts an arm out to protect himself as anyone would do. And Paredes, we've gone over that, but then retrospectively, it should have been looked at and gone, that'd be silly, that's not sending off and it's not a suspension. But they didn't. They confirmed that the referee got the decision right. And anyway, Bryce Mendes suspended it. I mean, this was a tricky one. It's a 3-1 victory for Real Sociedad, but Elche had chances and you know, got back in it at 2-1. Chances to get back in 2-0. And then I was pleased Oskarsson scored. He missed the sitter. And then when he gets through one-on-one, you're thinking, how's your nerve? You know, and he finished it with ease. It was a lovely finish.
Yeah.
Well, Izarbo was just astonishing the way he's playing. He was helped on that one with the bad back pass straight to three, taps it around the goalkeeper. Luka Sučić was quite... See, fortune goes your way when things are going your way, doesn't it? Sučić misses the first opportunity with a complete air shot, tangles up in his legs, and he still finds himself with another opportunity to slot it home. So, yeah, fortune favours the brave. Well, Sociedad have been really good. Be a good Copa del Rey match this week as well.
So that's tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the only disappointing thing about that, when I saw them in the oh, brilliant, they'll be good. I thought, oh, no, that's the second legs in August or something, isn't it? So honestly, why do you want a two-legged semi-final, honestly? Yeah. Anyway. Elche, slight problem, though, that when they lost three games in a row and they concede three goals every time they play, which is...
Yeah, it is.
It's not good.
And they can't keep making the same mistakes, which they are. They're giving their style of play, when it's working, it's good to watch and it's effective. But when it's not, then you do worry that there's, like Espanyol, but they haven't got the comfort zone of the cushion that Espanyol have got. So they're firmly in the thick of it. They can't continue to keep... Oh, they look good, but they lost...
Yeah, they have plummeted now because it's funny. The league table is such that it's quite tight, And then, but suddenly, oh no, they're only 2 points above the relegation zone.
Exactly.
And all
the clubs have got to look now and think, okay, we might be 10th, but we're still only 2 or 3 points above relegation. You can't look and go, oh, get in the change room after a game. Oh, we're up to 10th, lads.
Yeah.
Next week, we're down to 16th.
Yeah.
It must be terrifying every weekend now for half the division.
Let's keep going then. So Athletic Club 4, Levante 2. This was a red card early on. I thought it was a stupid tackle. It was a denying a goal scoring opportunity.
It was 50-50 though, wasn't it? The defender's going to get the biggest. I thought they were both like wrestling at.
I thought he started it. I thought it's Maturo.
Yeah, he did.
I thought,
and he's got too long.
He's got most to lose.
Yeah.
Because if Iñaki Williams gives a free kick away, all right, he's wasted a decent position. But the defender's got so much
strength. He held on for too long, Maturo.
And it's 15 minutes into the game, and and then they get hammered. The weird thing with this is the goals at Levante. It's got absolute brilliant goals in a 4-2 defeat.
And Kurusetsu was good as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he possibly could have had a hat-trick. I like Kurusetsu, and he gets a lot of criticism. People hark back to the old days. Oh, but I think if you play him on a regular basis, he's having to because Sanadi's out injured. I think he gets you 15 goals in La Liga goals in a season. And I think that's more than sufficient for a club like Athletic Club. And I believe he's going to do that this season. Mm. And yet all you hear people moan about is, oh, they haven't got a centre forward. They have. So play him on a regular basis like he's having to. He'll get confidence. He's efficient. Technically, he's good. And I think he's a decent striker. And I didn't think that at first.
Mm-hmm.
But he's grown on me because I think he has improved. He's worked hard to improve. And I'm always pleased when I see Guruzeta score a goal.
Yeah, good. Celta Vigo 1, Osasuna 2. So I mentioned about Villarreal shots on target. Osasuna only had 2 shots on target. And they won the game, which is, good. They were really struggling away from home at one point.
And one of those teams that were in that pack, they're just easing their way out of it now.
Yeah.
Budimir with another goal. It's a really good header, but you can't allow a cross into the box and allow Budimir that space. Starfield, I think, was the closest. They were fortunate with the bad defending from Celta for the winning goal after Borja Iglesias equalised. Yeah, I think it was just about a penalty, wasn't it, from Alejandro Catania? The arm was... He got caught out because his arm was up appealing for a foul.
Yeah.
He quickly put it down and tried to tuck it behind and it just caught the hand. It took a while for VAR to sort out.
Yeah.
And whilst it was sorting it out, how about that rain?
Yeah.
That's what you need when it's like a 5-minute delay for VAR and everyone was just standing. It was hail. It was really, really heavy. And I must admit, I was thinking, if you're a player, just get on with the game. Come on, let's get it going. Come on, hurry up. Look at the state of us all. And it was given Borja Iglesias scores. But, it's a good win for Osasuna and a tricky little run of form that Celta a little bit inconsistent.
1 point from 3 games. Isn't it? Yeah. But
and they were so good. Sociedad, but the progressing teams. And it's just come to a little bit of a halt now for Celta.
Yeah, I think the truth is that we're finding probably Espanyol, Celta, is that they're not much better than the teams way down the league. And like you say, it's not just, it's the numbers of the position. So you think, oh, they're seventh. They must be miles better than the team who are 17th. But they're not, are they?
They're not, no.
Right, a couple more goals. Sevilla versus Girona. Now, all sorts.
If you missed kick-off and left early, You've been snookered in this game, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you got there late and left early, you would have missed both goals. 1 minute, 91 minutes.
Yeah, And also, you could have missed the whole... You could have gone on the wrong day, which would have been
exactly
an easy thing to have done.
Interesting. It was called off on Saturday, wasn't it? Because of the rain in Seville. It was really bad. Roads flooded and all that. Cars floating away. And then on Sunday, when I was doing the Alaves-Getafe game, that was the first I found out that... And I've been reading the media and the press, and someone said to me, oh, yeah, because Seville Girona is on in a minute. I thought, what? That was called off yesterday. It's great. It's admirable that they got the game played the next day. But there weren't much information about the place about, that's being played tomorrow or it's being played today now. Yeah, that was kind of bizarre when I found out that that game was being played because I hadn't seen much notice of it.
Yeah, and then it's so Lamar scores another day. We'll do Tom Lamar another day, Terry. We haven't got time to go into his story. And then Sevilla equalise 92.
Great goal.
Yeah. Well taken, Kike Salas, isn't it? And then, and then there's a penalty, which ends up being taken in the 98th minute. Stuani, who of course has scored so many penalty goals.
29 he's missed, I think.
Sorry, say again?
He's missed 2 out of 29.
Yeah. So you think he's going to score. Blackadimos makes a great save. Very hard for goalkeepers to make penalty saves now. Now you think it should have been retaken?
Yeah. I mean, Alexis Sanchez encroaches.
Yeah, the Sevilla.
And he's the first player to touch the ball. It's as easy as that. You'd make an argument that Alexis Sanchez was wide of the goal, but it doesn't matter.
Because he's not in the original shot, is he? So it's an odd one, isn't it? But so I've looked it up and they said there was he didn't make any material difference.
He's the first player to touch the ball.
Yeah.
Now, because it's wider the goal, it doesn't matter. In my opinion, it doesn't. It's a straightforward law. There's no loopholes, no grey area. If a player encroaches and the ball rebounds to him and he's the first player to touch the ball, in my opinion, that's a straightforward retake.
Yeah. So you could write the law like that, couldn't you? But having a material effect, they've left them wriggle room to make their own decision. And they've obviously thought, well, also it didn't help that it was like 100 minutes into the game.
Yeah, but if you make that grey area then, where people can say, but if it was an Alexis Sanchez who got, say it was a Girona player who crossed it and Stuani gets in the 6-yard box and gets the tap in, that couldn't happen because Alexis Sanchez encroached into the box and was the first player to touch the ball. There's no need for a grey area in that, in my opinion. Now, all players do it. They're on the edge of the box. They're all looking to gain an advantage, which Alexis Sanchez was trying to do, and he was inside the penalty box.
It's an area where it's actually worked better because if you remember a few years ago, you couldn't get a penalty taken because everyone was half the team were in the box when a penalty was being taken. So now the fact that they're prepared to disallow them or make them retake them or whatever, whoever commits the offence, that's actually a really good thing. But yeah, I get the point. I agree with this. Why have the grey area? I see why they let it go because he'd beaten it out really quite hard, hadn't he, Blackadimos?
Yes.
And it was probably going out for a throw-in. And so they've obviously said, oh, well, never mind, crack on. But I can see why, as a Girona player, a fan, you'd be like...
Those little ones annoy me. I don't know why I get so annoyed. Those little rules, like fat throws and goalkeepers. The one that's really irritated me this year is the goalkeepers either throwing the ball out or kicking it out, and they're about a yard outside the penalty box. It's a handball. I see it 3 or 4 times a game. And I've started now shouting, handball! As if to say, no one else notices it. No one else cares. That's handball. It's a free kick on the edge of the penalty box. If I was a centre-forward playing now, I'd be on the ref every game. Yeah. Handball, handball, handball. And I'm shouting it now in COCOMs.
Yeah.
it's sometimes you see a goalkeeper run out to the edge of the box and does the throw-in. He's about 3 yards outside the box when he's releasing the ball out of his arms. And you're thinking, you're just ignoring that one now. And throw-ins, long throw-ins, just ignoring the fact the bloke's got one foot off the floor on the other leg's on the halfway, like half a metre on the pitch. Ball's not behind these. Well, the little throw-ins when they throw it to their teammate about 2 yards away. And it's like a netball shot. It's like, I'll just drop that there. And it's here. So, laws of the game. Encroachment should be, in my opinion, should have been retaken.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do though. We need to do a Patreon one, and we've got the Copa del Rey games to come. I'm going to ask you about Sergio Ramos and the future of Sevilla with the Patreons when we come back together, because there's so much to say about the state of Sevilla Football Club. So we'll do that another time. Leaves one more game. Getafe won at Alaves. I imagine Bordalas would have been furious, though, to have been involved in such an entertaining game.
It wasn't, trust me. You know, when I talked earlier about Betis stinking the place out on Thursday out of nowhere, Alaves have won their last two. They go into this game against Getafe, who barely got picked up points lately. And Alaves were awful. I mean, they were unlucky they got beaten the Copa del Rey against Real Sociedad. Dramatic defeat. But they were awful. But there was a different team from Alaves. So four or five players came back into the starting lineup for the La Liga game, and just nothing. Absolutely awful. I mean, Lucas Boye was decent up front. Yeah, they was just out of nowhere, you know. So you go into this game, Alaves looked like a team that had won a game for ages, and Hatafe looked full of confidence, and particularly in the second half. And they have made some changes. I said about 3 weeks ago, I feared for Hatafe. I still do, because I fear for all the teams down there. But they have worked hard in the transfer window to bring a number of players in, all on loan, of course. And Luis Vasquez gets his second goal. Satriano up front looked a handful as well. They look like proper Hatafe strikers, to be honest. Both are well over 6 foot. They both work hard. They've both got a point to prove. They're both similar age of 24, and they've been around all over the place, being loaned here and sold there and whatever. And that they look like proper borderless soldiers, to be honest. And it might just be enough for them to survive another season. So it was second half performance from Hatafe was really good.
Yeah, right. We will leave it there. So the Copa del Rey first legs are on this week. They are on telly in the UK and Ireland. If you look, you might check ITV4 because they randomly, Terry, the game suddenly appeared on ITV4.
Well, I have to be honest. I looked this morning and I can't see it on Premier Sport or ITV4.
Okay.
I'm sure it is somewhere. I did get an earlier round on Premier Sport where I just took a chance. It wasn't on the TV guide. Something else was meant to be on. It was the Real Madrid game when they got beat at Albacete.
Yeah. I think they're both being shown. But which way round? I think it swapped. I think Darren got in touch and they might have swapped who had which. Which is a bit, yeah.
But I looked at the TV guide and it's I haven't seen it on Premier Sport either game, and I haven't seen it on ITV. Yeah.
So there we are. So we work in the TV world, and we're criticising like Rayo Vallecano and Sevilla and stuff. Which company's got the rights to this? And when did they get them? And anyway.
Oh, they're showing them.
Yes, that's true. Or the classic one where you're watching Premier Sports on your laptop, randomly switching it off. Like someone comes in and changes the channel on you. And then you have to go on another channel. You have to watch the advert again before you're allowed in. Because the amount of times I've come back and there's a goal. Anyway. Enjoy your football this week, everybody. And so patrons, we'll see you soon. And we'll see everybody for another podcast next week. So we'll see you then. Bye-bye.